You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome. You're walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4 is our telephone number, and you can email me, DM live at breadboxmedia.com. We started on this road of talking about depression, which is not a depressing subject. Sometimes it can be. If you are hiding from your depression, or you're fearful you might be in depression, or you are in depression and you don't want to confront it, which is almost the same as hiding, even mentioning the subject can make you feel down. So let's twist that around a little bit, turn it around a little bit, and say, look, let's take a look at what is. Let's take a look at some symptoms, because sometimes, most of the time actually, the chicken and the egg, which you don't know which comes first, get all muddled up and you slide into a way of being that starts to begin to seem kind of normal for you. Old book in the 60s, and unfortunately the young gentleman that wrote it, I have no idea what the book was about, but it had a great title, but the young man who wrote it, Richard Farina, who was a musician, died very young in a motorcycle accident. And the title of his book was, I've Been Down So Long, It's Beginning to Look Like Up to Me. Don't know what the book was about, but I love that title. And why? Because that's what happens when we slide into depression. However that depression comes about. I had so many people come into me when I was in general practice who would say, well, I know why I feel this way. So therefore, it has to be something else. And that was during the time where I was in general practice. So they would come in for pain, sore throat, fatigue. It's not depression. It's not psychological, because I know why I feel this way. Conversely, people would come in not knowing why they felt this way and wondered why they felt that way. And wanting to express depression is a really, really painful thing. I myself have been in depression. I know what it feels like. And I might have been able to point why I was in depression, but it took a long time to even know that that's what was wrong, because I functioned very well in the world. So whether it's because of a physical illness, and in my case, different times in my life, several different things happened. When I was a medical student, I was learning how to do physicals, and a young 13-year-old coughed on me as I'm looking in her throat. And I'm really diving in her mouth almost. I'm real close, trying to see what I can see, and I'm looking at things, wondering, is that what I learned about? I was just a second-year student. And it turns out I ended up very sick, and she had mononucleosis. And I ended up getting a very bad case of it and ignoring it. And so I got very, very sick. And that in itself, after I was over the physical part of it enough, it started causing me a depression that I didn't understand was because at part and parcel with someone who had, as an adult, mononucleosis. Didn't understand it at all. I just knew I felt, I didn't even know how I felt. I just thought I was tired out in a mess because I was a medical student and I had a family. I didn't understand what was happening, but it didn't concern me either. I never thought of it in terms of the word depression. Same thing when I lost people in my family or someone else had a diagnosis or a move. seasonal affective disorder. I've experienced all those things. And each time it was accompanied by a down mood, which I didn't understand because my mood would lift when I was working around people and it just made sense. So it never hit me that depression was part and parcel with this. And I think that's really, really important because there's so many things we start to think, oh, I have a mental weakness or there's a mental issue here. And we isolate these behavioral feelings. And very, very often, there are good, well, there's always a good explanation. Just having a mental illness is a good explanation. But we can't say the word mental illness without cringing, without having a feeling that something is, there's a weak link somewhere. So it's like anything else. Can you get sick by having a weak genetic propensity? Sure. Can you get sick by having a fairly good genetic constitution and just being bombarded? You're a strong person. Ernest Shackleton, I always go back to him. He's the explorer in the turn of the, right around the early 1900s, who was the guy. He did that whole, look up The Endurance. There's a movie or a documentary called The Endurance. There's a book called The Endurance. It's also Ernest Shackleton. He was the explorer who was stranded. His ship got icebound and then crushed. And he did heroic things. So he's a very strong, strong man. And he lived, and so did everyone else in the crew, which was amazing. It was like 2 years, completely lost. In like 1910 or something. But he ended up having an accumulation of so many issues and probably some genetic propensity, but he died as a fairly young person, not too young, from a heart attack. But, you know, you just can't go through, many of us will not go there. And look how long he lived going there to the Antarctic, being lost for 2 years, having to have the stress of keeping those men alive while he had to separate from them and cram into some little tiny boat with huge Antarctic storms constantly going, eating whale blubber. So, you know, we think we tend to think that in our fairly pampered existence, where we have modern medicine, and we have the internet, and we have all our resources, and we have food, we tend to just start looking at these things and not seeing them as part of a whole. So I want to talk to you a bit about ways to look at the same thing. Talked yesterday about the National Institute of Mental Health and their PDF version. If you didn't hear yesterday's program, you can log on and it can tell you all about depression, which is really great. Gives you an idea of the symptoms, how men may manifest it different than women and children different than adults and adults different than the elderly. And it gives you an appreciation and what we used to call in medicine as students, what our attendings would tell us, maintaining a high index of suspicion. And what that means is that you have all these possibilities that you learn about. So you have to start following the clues, be a nice little sleuth, follow the clues, be your own anthropologist, as I've talked to you before, and take a look at your whole picture. And then which one raises your index of suspicion highest? Can you say, yes, there was a move. Yeah, something else is going wrong with my child. The school grades are falling. This is happening. That is happening. Something's not right here, or with your own self, or you just had a baby, or you just had a downturn in finances, or your mother was diagnosed with breast cancer. Something in your life. And it may explain it, but it doesn't mean that you can go untreated. And that's what we have to also understand always. We do not diagnose and treat on this program. We can't. We can't. However, can give you that high index of suspicion, a different way of looking at things, ways to incorporate the whole picture everything around you, from are you getting enough sunshine to take a look at what's happening in your life. And even though you can, as I said in the beginning of this program, point as many people did, oh, well, I know why I feel this way. And then they might give me many reasons. That doesn't mean that it isn't happening. You may know why you ended up with a horrible staph infection that ended up compromising your leg, let's say, or why you were bitten by a brown recluse spider because you went camping and it was in your sleeping bag and you didn't shake it out. It doesn't mean that you can go untreated. It doesn't mean that you have to ignore it, because you won't have a leg and you'll probably get septic and die. So we want to make sure that if you start thinking there might be a problem, or you know there is a problem, and you just don't want to face it because you feel like you will not be part of that worthless feeling that accompanies depression, is not feeling that you're good enough. So, well, it's just that I'm not a good enough wife. I'm not a good enough mother. I'm not a good enough coworker. I'm not a good enough person. I'm not pious enough. I don't love God enough. I'm not religious enough. And then you sink lower. So we're going to talk this program about some links we have and how to look at these links when you have ADHD along with depression, when you have other things along with depression as well, and talk about some also behavioral things that you might want to take a look at in your own family. So when we return from the other side of the break, we're going to get into that. I would also like you to, or invite you to, call 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. I am your host, Dr. Michelle.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. Hopefully this sounds a heck of a lot better. We had some difficulty in our sound system, but we are back on track. So a little bit easier on the ears, perhaps. Okay, I'm going to read you a couple different things. One is going to be in the more qualitative, which they're going to talk about. We talked about this link between ADHD or ADD, depending on how you want to talk about it, pretty much the same stuff. The ADHD, the attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, we think about in kids because the hyperactivity, and a lot of times in adults, we don't see the hyperactivity or we don't recognize it. And so we just call it attention deficit disorder. But, you know, it's pretty much, you're going to have them go hand in. It's the same thing, basically, pretty much the same thing. Okay, I want to read to you the more qualitative, or discuss the more qualitative connection between depression and ADHD. Also, what the Psychiatric Congress says about attention deficit disorder and the disturbingly high prevalence of mental illness in women. So that was their little title. Also, a little bit about the psychosocial factors that happen around anxiety disorders, because ADHD or ADD is a it is an anxiety disorder. We want to also remember all the links with the giant term of depression. We use it, so, oh, I'm so depressed, or this is depressing. It's a very common blanket statement that we have. It's kind of used for a lot of different things. But when we're talking about true
diagnosable depression, it can be a very damaging thing and a very insidious thing. It's almost the way diabetes can creep up on people. It's certainly not the same, although diabetes can and diabetic medication can increase or cause depression. But it's also something that is very overlooked or looked at as the cause for everything. So again, it can be very frustrating if you're the person who's dealing with it, or you have a family member who's dealing with it, because you look at the one hand where you only go to the physical, or you look at the other hand where you only, where you say, yeah, it's, you're just depressed and they're given an antidepressant or some medication is sent on your merry way. And perhaps there is a low grade thyroid a thyroid condition that is starting to maybe not show its head as far as in laboratory diagnosis, but perhaps it's on its way. So these are things we have to always keep in mind. That's why it's always good to get a full physical if you can, know somebody or get somebody, you know, somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who's very thorough. Make sure the physical is taken care of and the mental, because when we deal with other people like your children or let's say your elderly parent, it's very easy to anticipate for them why they might feel a certain way. So you can say, well, of course my parent feels this way, my mother feels this way, my father feels this way, they don't have anything left, or they just broke their ankle. We don't tend to then look at, or how do I put this? The way I'm talking about it makes it sound really complicated, and it is, but it really isn't. Because the take-home bottom line nugget, when you distill it down and get that drop of water, is that a lot of factors play into mood. So an elderly person with a urinary tract infection can present with only depression. A person with dementia can present as with depression. However, a person with depression can appear as if they have dementia. So you have to really keep going to be the most functional person you can and look at everything. Certain anti-ulcer medications cause depression in some people. All kinds of medications, antibiotics can cause depression. I told you of a teenager that was depressed every time they took ibuprofen. So we always have to like start looking at the simple, the things that won't hurt us, and jettison them out of our lives. So if we're used to taking a lot of Benadryl at night to sleep, let's say, you can go buy it at a drugstore or at a grocery store, the Tylenol PMs, or this, or that, maybe take a look at those. Go to your doctor. Talk it over with them. And those very simple things sometimes that we don't even know that we're doing can be the answer or the new move for a great job to a place from a sunny place to a cloudy place. Seasonal affective disorder. All right. So what is the link between ADHD and depression? Well, the Psychiatric Congress wrote up a little article posted yesterday on a research from the University of Toronto looking at 107 women ages 20 to 39 years of age, talking about, now we're just talking about women now, so it's across the spectrum, young, old, women, men, male, female, boys, girls, there is a disturbingly high prevalence of mental illness in that is what we call comorbid or coexists with the diagnosis of ADHD. Now, if you step way back, and you look at ADHD, lack of attention, inability to concentrate, and couple that with the fact that it is an anxiety disorder, step way back and look at anxieties is a sister or brother holding hands with fear. So somewhere along the line, most likely now, If there's no other medical reason, remember all psychiatric diagnoses have to have as their caveat, not explainable by a medical diagnosis. So in a child who has epilepsy, seizure disorder, it is known that they are at a higher risk for attention deficit disorder and depression and other mental problems by simply having a seizure disorder. And a seizure disorder can be brought on by many different things: birth traumas, infections, high fevers, all kinds of things. So I want you to just get an appreciation. Don't confuse the situation. Don't confuse yourself. I mean, it sounds confusing. I know that. But that's why it's always good to go and get some really good sleuths, doctors, healthcare workers on your pathway with you. That way you can not be just treating all these little compartments and then end up in a big mess anyway. So when we look at this article, we'll start there with this ADHD linked with disturbingly high prevalence of mental illness in women. Remember, this is one study out of Toronto, 107 women between the ages of 20 and 39. And here it says, women with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder are far more likely to have mental and physical health problems than women without ADHD. Researchers from the University of Toronto compared 107 women 20 to 39 years of age with self-reported ADD. Now remember, that's self-reported ADD. They're saying, I can't pay attention to anything. They're not necessarily diagnosed. They are self-reporting this. The prevalence, and here's the conclusion, this is after they looked at, they compared it to 3,801 women in the same age group without ADHD. So it's a small number compared to a high number. And what they said is the prevalence of mental illness among women with ADHD was disturbingly high, with 46% having seriously considered suicide, 36% having generalized anxiety disorder, 31% having major depressive disorder, and 39% having substance abuse disorder problems at some point in their life. They also go on to say that they had three times the rate of insomnia, chronic pain, suicidal ideation, childhood sexual abuse, generalized anxiety disorder, and more than twice the rate of substance abuse and current smoking, depressive disorder, poverty, and childhood physical abuse. Then it says, unfortunately, our study does not provide insight into why women with ADHD are so vulnerable. Now, that says something to me that we will talk about when we turn from the break a little bit more strongly. But I also want to close with a kind of a cultural assumption, and that is that boys primarily have ADHD and that we don't think of it in girls and women. We think of it in guys more likely, but it's not true. Now, the vulnerability I want to talk about also is that when you look at it, if they are more, they report or they have more higher incidence over twice or three times the amount of childhood sexual abuse. So which causes what? Of course, children, girls, boys who come from sexual abuse, parents with mental disorders, abusive parents, alcoholic parents, all kinds of neglect, they will be more likely, because it is an anxiety disorder, to have no stability in their life, and they will have a difficulty concentrating because they're unsafe. We will talk about this on the other side of break and the connections. I am your host, Dr. Michelle.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You can also email DM live at breadboxmedia.com. So we're looking at the study from that was quoted from the Psychiatric Congress, which meets every year, where people from all over the country and other nations come and gather so they can read the latest research. They can have presenters talking about the latest research, the impact that it has. So we're getting a little snapshot of that. And this was written up in the journals of childcare. It was actually from the, I'll leave you the link. So when we look at this, and they say doesn't explain why these women are so vulnerable, that women with ADHD are much more likely to have that wide range of mental and physical health problems in comparison to women without them. And there's a lot of it was, and some of them was disturbingly high, as they said, and they really are. 46% of the women who had ADHD, self-reported ADHD, have seriously considered suicide. 36% have a generalized anxiety disorder, which generalized anxiety disorder is actual a psychiatric diagnosis. 31% have the major depressive disorder, and 39% have substance abuse problems at some point in their life. And I will add in there, you're going to find eating disorders as well. This is not a complete article. This is a synopsis. So my guess is that you're going to find eating disorders. You're going to find all kinds of things. They talked about the fact that most of them, they're three times as likely to have had childhood sexual abuse and other childhood related familial problems. This is really important because they said it doesn't explain why the vulnerability. Now, I don't exactly know what that sentence means. Does it mean that they're asking the question, why are people who have ADHD so vulnerable to those problems? Or are they saying, why do those problems cause ADHD? Which I think they're saying the first one. It sounds like they're saying, why is this population so vulnerable to these things? Well, I get what they're saying in a general term, but it's a little bit confusing, a little bit misleading. It's like you want to just scratch your head and say, well, of course, when you have a history of childhood sexual abuse, as an adult, and especially as an adult woman, as we've talked about so many times before, whether you're a teacher or a janitor or somebody, a bus driver or somebody just chasing you down a street on your way to school, that's a sexual trauma. And when I say somebody, I mean an adult. Someone recently reported that they had been approached as they were getting off the school bus by a man who was trying to grab their arm, and they got free. I read this in a little news blurb, and it was very traumatizing to them. Well, of course, the person had, obviously malintent toward that child. And so, of course, that's going to make someone vulnerable. If you're having repeated trauma within the family of origin, what about what happens to a child? A child needs to feel safe, secure, and sheltered. And you don't feel safe and secure and sheltered if your parent is completely unavailable because they're drunk. Many a person who is a recovered alcoholic or drug abuser talks about having their own child wonder whether they're going parent the child, wondering whether are you going to be able to sit up enough. Here, little 5 and 6 year olds making coffee for their parents so they can go to work because they're drunk. That's traumatic. But if you don't have that safety, you're always scanning your environment because you're scared. Little children are always scanning. They don't have the eye contact there. They've not had that sit down, just laser beam eye-to-eye contact with their parent and they need that. And if you're one of those people, you needed that. And so as you get older, even though you function in the world, you can be more prone to these things. Now, does that mean because we know why that you go untreated, that you don't take medication? No. If you need medication, you can try medication. You need to do this, though, very with a lot of being your own anthropologist. Look at your whole family system. Be a cultural anthropologist within your own culture, within your own religious culture, within your own school culture, your own neighborhood culture, your own state culture, your own family culture, and your extended family culture. Be your own anthropologist, your own cultural anthropologist. And take into consideration all these facts. You do not have to find them all for yourself. You don't have to spend forever looking at them, but you have to understand and give yourself an appreciation for you. So when the Eureka, it's called the Eureka Alert, the global source for science news. And it's a little bit more general than the Psychiatric Congress. So it's a little bit more layperson. So we're going to look at that article as they report it. They said, we were surprised. This is, they were quoting the university, the co-author, the University of Toronto, saying, we were surprised at the high level of physical health problems that the women were experiencing. More than one in four of these relatively young women, remember they were 20 to 39, said that physical pain prohibited some of their activities, which was much higher than the 9% of their peers without ADHD who had disabling pain. Insomnia was also more prevalent in the women with ADHD, as was smoking and substance abuse sometime in their life. And I'm going to add eating disorder. It says, unfortunately, our study does not provide insight into why women with ADHD are so vulnerable. It is possible that some of the mental health problems may be caused by and contributing to financial stress. The study also found one in three women reported they had difficulty meeting basic expenses as food, shelter, etc. Excuse me. Again, I want to go back, being the anthropology, the medical anthropologist, the cultural anthropologist, taking a look and saying, they're not putting the big glaring. We're not treating the family. Now, you, apart from your family, if this was your family of origin, you're not going to treat your family now necessarily. Or if you are a child in a family like this, if you have children and you've got this going on in your family, neglect, sexual abuse, or you know of sexual abuse, or you suspect some kind of sexual abuse from a neighbor down the kid. It happens in homeschooled families. I want you all to know that. I've got a Catholic audience here as well as a non-Catholic audience. I know of Catholic homeschoolers who have collectives, and one that I know of, a father in a very large family was actually carrying on and not carrying on. This is what the, how it was reported. They were having, quote, an affair, unquote. It wasn't an affair. It was childhood sexual abuse with a 16-year-old homeschool student in their collective. So this is, you have to be as wise as serpents, as gentle as doves. You cannot be Pollyanna in this. If you're noticing, as I think it was Maya Angelou, somebody said, who was fabulous, I don't remember exactly who, I think it was Maya Angelou, if somebody shows you who they are, believe them. So, and they're talking more about sketchy relationships and abusive boyfriends or alcoholics, but I'm talking about your child. If your child is showing a sudden change in behavior, or if you are now connecting the dots back to your past, believe it. Don't say, well, that was so long ago. And you'll have parents that say, why are you hanging on to that? That was yesterday. Everyone else has moved on. I've had people report that preachers and priests have told them it's about forgiveness. Everyone's forgiven them. Why can't you? And so you sit there in a little dark corner beating yourself up. You can't do that. You need to start taking care of you. You need to start taking care of your children. So when you see these dots being connected, or you see it playing out afresh right in front of your face, or you know darn well that that brother-in-law, as one person reported, that brother-in-law molested you when you were a child, why do you think that brother-in-law, who was never called on the carpet for it, never put in jail for it, is not going to molest the kids, the grandkids, the nephews, the nieces, when the whole family says, oh, well, that was then, this is now. Why haven't you forgiven? That's not appropriate. So you must be protective in your own skin, in your own life. And yes, it can manifest itself. Again, the chicken and the egg. Why do you think, you know, why do they scratch their head thinking, well, maybe it's financial stress. Maybe there's financial stress because the problem created anxiety, which never got addressed, initiated, or resolved. The person always thought it was up to them to be alone in the world to figure out everything. So this isn't the only reason. Again, if you need those medications, you need that therapy, you need to have someone talk to you about this to put the perspective right, to get you physically functioning well, to get you out of the funks, to get you a little bit more on track. Yeah, you use that, but you don't use one excluding the other. You don't use, yeah, well, now I know why, so I don't have to deal with it. It's all about taking the information you have and using it intelligently, faithfully, and using all the information at your disposal, including prayer, including spiritual direction, including the legal system if you need it. That's what's important. I am Dr. Michelle. We'll see you on the other side of the break. Dr. Michelle Live, 573 for Bread.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Your host, Dr. Michelle, and you're walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live every day, Monday through Friday, 9 o'clock Pacific time and 12 o'clock Eastern time, and all the others in between you all can figure out. Little hour here, little hour there. You can also look at old podcast, listen to. You can look at them too, but you won't see a lot. You can scan them. You can listen to previous podcasts by logging on to breadboxmedia.podbean.com. So, link between ADHD and depression and how to overcome them is an article I'd like to read to you from it's actually from the, let's see, it's from Bangor, Maine, where they have, I don't know what it's called BDN Maine, so I'm not positive what that stands for, but it's a blog, and there's a gentleman who is a LCSW. He is a executive director of Higher Ground Services in Brewer, Maine. I guess it's Brewer, perhaps, and maybe not Bangor. And he specializes in recovery from trauma, depression, anxiety, addiction. His name is Jim LaPierre. And I have looked at his Recovery Rocks is his particular blog that he does, and I read it quite frequently, and I've referred to it several times on the program. So this one I like. It's called The Link Between ADHD and Depression and How to Overcome Them. Now, this is a completely different viewpoint. This is someone who works with people, has worked with people forever in various stages of recovery, and oftentimes people who are in recovery for, let's say, drugs, alcohol, addictions of any kind have comorbidly or alongside with it. And again, eating disorders falls into that too. Many of you women out there have had some touch with an eating disorder or a child with an eating disorder. Comes along from family of origin trauma, or any kind of trauma along the way that just stops people in their tracks. Even if people who are dealing, as Robert J. Wicks devotes his life to dealing with people who deal with people who have trauma, because they get traumatized vicariously as well, or get very burned out. So it's just a long, big circle. We are here to help each other. So this, I like this because it's very qualitative, as different from the Toronto studies that we talked about, or Psychiatric Congress, which is going to give you a more scientific viewpoint out of studies. So he's, I'll just read it to you. It's tough to imagine if you're neurotypical. Maybe you and your brain have a relatively harmonious relationship. Be grateful for that. If you've been sleep deprived, drank one too many Red Bulls, and found yourself overwhelmed by racing thoughts, distractibility, jittery, restlessness, and feeling a bit flooded by sensory input, that's a little taste of what it's like to live with attention deficit disorder. And then he puts in parentheses, we no longer call it ADHD. Except we're like that all the time. All the time. I've lived with ADD all my life. I'm just too old and tired to be hyperactive anymore. My brain has two speeds, 100 miles per hour and REM sleep. I live with depression most of my life. My brain tells me I kicked it many years ago, but I know better. I can come back anytime I ease up on my self-care or spend too much time alone. Sometimes the obvious eludes me. I never associated my conditions as having any cause and effect. I thought my depression was a product of my past and feeling that there must be something very wrong with me that I never fit into mainstream society. Of course, the way my brain works is a big part of why I don't fit in. It's not a product of enlightenment or self-actualization that leaves me bored by the mainstream media, people, social norms, everyday things. It's that my mind has already rapid-fired analyzed it, found it lacking, and worse, completely predictable and therefore dull. It's like watching an unending series of formulaic movies, desperately hoping to be surprised. It's craving experience and desperately needing an unending supply of input and simultaneously needing outlets. It's having an insatiable appetite and perusing an endless buffet of celery and ice cubes. It's wanting to be understood and having no idea how to explain. It's having a love-hate relationship with yourself and learning every lesson in the hardest possible way. Quote, I live in conflict and contradiction, end quote. And he's quoting ideas and abilities. Boredom is intolerable emptiness. Depression follows. Can't afford it. Search. Find the next distraction. Stay busy. Work too hard. Do everything too hard. Burnout, start over, repeat, until it hurts too much. New plan. My solutions have been almost entirely spiritual. The more I connect with other misfits, the healthier my life is. The more I have great conversations about ideas, music, books, and the more I learn new things, the better I am. Be of service to others. Allow others to serve you. Reciprocity is scary, but it allows intimacy to grow. Stop whining about wanting to be happy and seek joy. Happiness is fleeting and joy endures. Practice self-acceptance. I'm different, and so are the best people I know. I've learned that I have to give my brain projects to work on. For most people, what if questions are usually a product of anxiety. For folks like me, there are opportunities being considered and dreams being dreamt. Most of the folks I've known who live with unwieldy brains struggle to find folks they can relate to in a meaningful way. Seek us out in the arts, in social services, in hobbies that require passion, and just notice that we're like you. We're different too. It's not hard to spot someone's freak flag, even though a lot of us hide them. It's hard to introduce yourself and say, "Hey, me too." It's also totally worth it. I wanted to leave you this weekend with this beautiful article. I'm going to leave the link as well on the podcast show notes. Because in all of this, there's a place for you to say, regardless of the fact that all this stuff may have happened to you, regardless of the fact that someone's telling you you have a diagnosis of attention deficit disorder or depression, that puts you in a category of people. Ernest Shackleton, the man I talked about in the beginning, the man I love to refer to, one of the greatest explorers of all time and the most amazing man who kept alive his entire crew with just knowing how to deal with people, partially because of that. He had bouts of depression. A few times in his journals, I've read his journals, he's talked about how despairing he felt, but he couldn't let his men know. Yes, we do. I told you I did. I've had depression. I have anxiety. One of the best people I've ever known in the entire world, a soldier with a horrible, was on Hamburger Hill. He was a medic. And he was diagnosed with dementia, Alzheimer's, put on an Alzheimer's drug almost 20 years ago now because he was so depressed and shocked and triggered back into his trauma when his wife left him for another man. And I kept saying, "You don't have Alzheimer's. I know it. I know it. I know it." But the neurologist said he did. But, you know, we worked with it. I'm not going to tell him, you know, I told him what I thought, but not take, he needed to stay on his medications, do what he needed to do. But it turns out he's not on those medications now. And he has fashioned, carved canoe trips for veterans and disabled people and people all over the world out of a swamp during this time. You can't do that with Alzheimer's. He was able to buy property, work the property, live the property, get the canoes, know how to do it, know how to do the safety, know how to get insurance, know how to make it going, know how to advertise. You don't do that with Alzheimer's, but you can act like you have Alzheimer's and not act intentionally with severe, severe depression. You can also have hallucinations. You can also not be very productive. You can also have attention deficit disorder. And you can have that because you've had shocks, anxieties, and traumas. We connect all those dots. But if this is something that's been lifelong with you, sometimes we just got to work with it. That's why you need to do everything in your power. Utilize all your resources. And what does Jim LaPierre say at the very end of this article? It's because after all this time of his own struggle, working with people his whole career, that's what his career is, working with people just like him, he found that the answer for him was mainly spiritual. So don't necessarily fly off and go onto an extreme. Get those people around you. Make sure there's nothing physically happening with you. Make sure you've got things going. Look at your children. Look at your life. Connect the dots this weekend, please. But also know that you're joining a very cool group of people, including Ernest Shackleton and Picasso and, I mean, you just name it, Oscar Wilde, Mozart. All these people had diagnosable mental illnesses. So, you know, but they just weren't diagnosed at that particular time. So work with yourself. Be kind to yourself. Be gentle with yourself. Get the help you need. Pray. See you on Monday.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.